right, everybody. Welcome back to the Comedy Castle podcast. I'm Joel Fragamini. I'm going to be your host, telling you everything that's going on here at the Comedy Castle this week. A very special show today. The 200th Comedy Castle podcast. That's what this is. That's what you're listening to right now. The 200th episode of the Comedy Castle podcast. And 200, two interviews. And not just two interviews. I, for my money, two of the best comedians in the world are speaking to me today, and they both happen to be here this week at the Comedy Castle. Tom Cotter and Brad Upton, two great interviews. But let's start with what's going on this week, all right? That's how we always start this show, so this one will be no different. October 1st, that's Tuesday night, as many of you may be hearing this, as the show goes up on late on Monday, early on Tuesday. The 101 Comedy Class Showcase, the students of Bill Bouchard's Beginner Comedy Class. They're going to entertain you at 7:30 p.m. You can get your tickets, as always, for all of these shows on ComedyCastle.com. But these are the beginner students, so friends and family mostly. But if you want to just see some brand new talent, that's the night to come out to the Comedy Class Showcase. Those are fun shows. 7:30 p.m. once again on that one. And again, comedy classes always starting up with Bill Bouchard, the beginner class. My advanced comedy class starts October 19th at the club. So you can call the club and sign up for that one as well. If you've done the beginner class, you've done a little bit more comedy. In fact, you'll hear in these interviews, I get comedy advice from these guys. I try to do that. So I'm learning from these interviews. Those lessons go into the class, and I think it makes it great. But anyway, that's the Tuesday night show on the 1st of October. At Wednesday, October 2nd, another open mic night, a great lineup of open mic comedians. In fact, I believe our MC this week is Steve Widzinski, who is a guy who just got out of my advanced comedy class. So he's doing great things. It's always a great lineup, always fun at open mic night. Some brand new comics, some veterans. It's always fun there. A big fundraiser for you on Thursday night with Tom Cotter, you're going to hear on this show. This is a benefit for the South Oakland Citizens for the Homeless. It's called Spread the Laughs. There's a link on ComedyCastle.com to get the tickets. You actually get them through their website, but there is a link there. 6 p.m., you got a dinner, I believe, that night. Yeah, dinner, auctions, fun stuff. It's good to raise money at the Comedy Castle. We did that this past weekend with an animal charity. That was fun. And then Tom Cotter comes, has the rest of his shows on Friday and Saturday night, 7:15 and 9:45 on Friday the 4th, 7 p.m. and 9:30 on Saturday the 5th. If you don't know Tom, America's Got Talent several seasons ago, it was season 7, and you know, he really did a great job on that show. We'll talk about how he lost to a dog act. Got some thoughts on that one. But really, the guy and both of these guys that you're here today, Brad and Tom, a fire hose of jokes, a machine gun of laughter. They will hit you with so many jokes, you can't help but laugh. That's Tom Cotter. Five great shows with him, including that fundraiser on Thursday. And then Brad Upton comes in for one show at 7:30 on Sunday night, October the 6th. Brad, you know, you may know Brad from his dry bar comedy special. It got over 16 million views on YouTube and plus all the other platforms for dry bar. 200 million views. He was doing a boomer versus Gen Z bit, mostly on that first special that went viral and went everywhere. He's played with so many big names in comedy as well. I am going to talk to him about his opening for Joan Rivers, and he is the current opener for Johnny Mathis. He had some great Johnny Mathis stories. He's a regular on the Grand Ole Opry, of all places. I mean, Brad is something else. Again, it's joke with this guy. It's just setups. It's just punchlines. And I don't care what age you are, you will laugh at this. I don't care how, you know, he's a clean comedian, Brad, but I don't care how dirty, what kind of edgelord comedy stuff you're into. Oh, dude, I'm a Cumtown guy. I would never go see. No, you will laugh at Brad Upton. You will laugh at Brad Upton. Trust me. I don't care who you're. I'm into Legion of Skanks. It doesn't matter. You're going to laugh at Brad Upton. You're going to laugh at Brad. Going to laugh at Brad. That's Sunday night, 7:30. We'll talk to Brad, too. Got some great stories from him. I guess I should mention Legion of Skanks. Shout out to Big J. Oakerson. Brought my name up on the Joe Rogan Experience last week. I don't know where you'll find that video, but it's out there. Talking about Joel from Michigan. Like that guy. Big fan of Jay Oakers. Worked with him many times. Hopefully next year at the Comedy Castle. We'll see. Fingers crossed about that one. But yeah, the 200th show, you're about to hear it. You know, Tom Cotter, again, super funny guy. Again, a million jokes, all funny. You know, you may hear a swear word or two out of Tom Cotter. I'm not saying Tom's squeaky clean if you're coming to see him, but he does talk about the America's Got Talent thing. I'm going to talk about how dog acts work, what you're about to hear. I do not know, and I just want to say for the record, that I do not know if the dog act on season 7 of America's Got Talent worked in the way that I explain dog acts work. Because I explain it, and it's not really great if you're an animal person. Really any person, because I think it's disgusting. If that's really what happens. And I don't know that. I threw it out there as comedy, but I've heard stories about how the animal acts work, and I don't really like them. You know, I don't know, was the joke, somebody joked about, you know, the bear will ride the bicycle in the circus. He's not really riding the bicycle. His feet are nailed to the pedals and he's running away. I forget which comedian said that, but that's a great bit. And it kind of works that way. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of the dog act. And Tom lost to the dog act. He came in second place. But really, one of the funniest comedians you'll ever see. You'll hear about what his strategy was when he said, I'm going to give you topics. You pick the topic. I'll do a bit about that. That really takes some big cojones to do that. But Tom did it on AGT, and he was terrific at it. So you hear about his wife's a comedian. And you hear what that's like to live together that way. And Tom went viral just a couple years back talking about Baby It's Cold Outside. They canceled that song. And Tom says, well, what's really on the radio? And we're canceling Baby It's Cold Outside. That bit went viral. He's known for that one. He'll talk a little bit about that on the show. I encourage you to check that out on his Instagram. And I'm just going to go from one interview to the next. And, of course, Brad Upton. We talked about the great Joan Rivers. I hear great stories about her. Great stories about working with Johnny Mathis and what it's like to go out with him. And they do it in a way that I did not expect. So when you hear the format of the Johnny Mathis show with Brad Upton, that was surprising. He'll tell you about what happened when his dry bar special went viral. And you'll also hear about he had a health scare recently and in the last few years. And he's doing well now, but he'll tell you about it, and it's frightening. And I'm glad he's doing well because he really is one of my favorite guys. Again, nice guys, really fun interviews. I'm going to shut up, let you listen to these. It's the 200th show. Let's enjoy. Right now, we'll start out here with Mr. Tom Cotter. Well, listen, I'm gonna start the interview right now then, because okay. I think you're one of the best in the business. That's what
you
I
have
think.
Impeccable taste.
I really do, and I say that in addition to Brad Upton, who I was we were just talking about, who's coming in. I mean, it's all jokes, and as a comic myself, when I hear a guy like you, I go, that's all jokes, and maybe the harder part about that just being all jokes compared to a lot of sort of newer or more modern styles of comedy, the jokes are all good. Like, that's amazing to me.
Not all mine are good, but it's quantity over quality. I throw a lot out at people. I do about 2 hours of material in 1 hour.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you didn't like the last one, I'm already into the next one. That's the joy of me.
Yeah. You've really made a name for yourself that way. I think America's Got Talent was really an example of that. When you were going into, I forget what round it was. You can tell the story about, give me a category and I'll do a bit on it.
Yeah. We called that comedy on demand. Oh, and
terrifying. That's terrifying to do.
It wasn't that scary. I gave them 8 topics and I had prepared for 8 topics. So anywhere it went, I was kind of confident I could go with it. And bringing up AGT is funny because, we chatted earlier before we went on live here and you said you were going to go walk your dog, which was passive aggressive because you know that I lost to a dog act. You didn't need to bring that up. You could have said I'm running some errands. You could have said I've got a dentist appointment, but you said, no, I'm going to go walk my dog, which was basically a cyber kick in my groin by saying that.
Well, first of all, I did watch that whole season and I do know the dog you're referring to. And while that was a terrific dog act, as far as dog acts go, you know, I, not only is it just you're a great comedian and you really deserve to win, they really shouldn't have dog acts on AGT for other reasons, I think, you know, because, I mean, you got a dog, right? I saw a dog. You have a dog, right?
I have a dog. You have a dog. I love my dog.
Yeah, I love my dog. But we like you heard, I was walking my dog and I feed my dog. I feed my dog. He goes and sleeps, right? That's what my dog does. Probably what your dog does. Those dogs on AGT, you know, if you want your dog to do all those flips, you know, you don't feed him for 48 hours and ask him if he'll do a flip.
Yes.
And then if he doesn't do a flip, you hit him in the nose with the newspaper and then he starts flipping.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not it.
They were tortured and they were abused. And they, I will tell you that when I was backstage, they got packages delivered of puppy treats from Lance Armstrong. So I'm not suggesting that there was any malfeasance in there. But when you come in second to a dog act, you do feel like number two. Yeah. I will share that with you and I will never get over it.
Nah, but that, you know, look, you showed that. I mean, as a comedian, as a performer, and I think Howard Stern on that show really, really was sympathetic with the whole thing about, like, how can you just say this, you know, you must have a hunk of material that you would feel would be your best for that occasion. And to not have that and to not be too concerned about what you're going to do, at least seemingly, was just so brave on its own. It deserves, you know, that deserves recognition right there.
Yeah, that was a roll of the dice because other people that I respect told me not to do that. Mm-hmm. They said that Howard Stern would hate that because he would think it was gimmicky or something. Mm. But I had to set myself apart. There was another comic in the quarterfinals at that point, and I wanted to show that I was more seasoned, and I had to set myself apart from him. So that's why I did that. Yeah. And it worked out well.
Yeah, we're still talking about it.
Right up until I lost to a damn dog act on national television.
Well, how many years has that been? It's been a few years, right? So
it's been a while. You know what, Joel? I take solace in the fact knowing that most of those dogs are now deceased,
exactly.
And I still
That's
win.
Where I was going
so,
with
who's the real winner here? Is what I ask. Yeah,
the dogs are not at the Comedy Castle this weekend.
They are not.
They are not at the Comedy Castle this weekend. But man, you've had a heck of a career. I was just reading up on all the stuff you've done over the years, and just having that reputation as a guy who can play to anybody. Did you feel like that was going to be like if you looked at when you started out and you said in 20 years, 30 years, wherever, did you feel like you'd get to where you are, or was that just something you figured out along the way?
Yeah, I never knew where this was going to go. And it definitely, you know, with obviously most recently COVID, but there have been other peaks and valleys in the career that you just never know where it's going to go. You and I, you're also an entertainer. We took the road less traveled. And so that's a riskier proposition for your life. But I married a comedian because who needs health insurance? And we've raised three kids. Two of them are about to graduate college. One's a senior in high school, and none of them are in rehab or prison yet. Yeah. So somehow it's all worked out.
Good job.
And I count my blessings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've dated comedians. That never worked for me.
Oof. Yeah, it's bad. My wife dated a few comics. Her nickname was actually Comic Relief. But hello. Did I say that out loud? No, I'm kidding.
But yeah, because the comic that I dated for a long time, just comedy was the one thing that we would fight over. If that was brought up, you know, it always turned into a fight. Me giving her a suggestion, her giving me a suggestion. Nobody wanted to take notes from the other person. And so two comedians sharing a life together, not talking about comedy ever.
Well, it's a rough road, I will say, at times. But initially, early on, it was difficult. But then we both realized that, you know, if they're looking for a funny woman, they're not looking for me. And if they're looking for a funny dude, they're not looking for her. And so we kind of just became really supportive of each other. And rarely are to this day have we ever been in competition with each other for the same thing. Mm-hmm. So, and we actually like working together, to be honest with you. It's fun to go on the road with her on occasion. Yeah. So all is well. 23 years of marriage later, and here we are.
That's great. Now, I've seen your wife, and she's very funny.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think she's funny. Yeah.
I think so too. That's nice you worked that out there. Let's talk about this was one of the things. I guess this was a big deal a couple years ago, right? I mean, still a thing that the baby it's cold outside bit just had me cracking up before we started talking here. I love that thing.
Yeah. And I was just trying to point out, I don't bash people over the head with my politics, yeah. but the cancel culture thing was just such a, we came out of the pandemic where we couldn't work at all into this woke world where everything was getting canceled and friends of mine got canceled and people that I looked up to got canceled. And I just thought it was a little off the rails. And so I wanted to point that out. And this was one of the ways I could do that. So I did that. Yeah. I did that viral video. It went viral. And it's gotten me a lot of exposure and some of it not positive because a lot of people don't agree with my stance on it. But,
oh, really?
You know, I'm just trying to make a point that, you know, you can't. We used to have freedom of speech in this country. And if you don't want to be offended, don't go to a comedy club. Yeah. You know, something's going to ruffle your feathers. So right. just strap in and enjoy it or avoid it.
And it's also, I think, and I teach comedy class. So I always explain to my students, too, it's what is offensive to people is just what's offensive to them at that time. To try to define it and tell you, oh, never talk about this, never talk about that. Well, you know, that what we're accepting today, tomorrow we may not accept. And then the things that we're talking about today might have been fine to talk about 5 years ago or 10 years ago. It just makes you insane.
Yeah.
A little bit.
And they keep moving the goalposts.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like in our New York City now, there you get frowned upon if you say homeless. Now they want you to say undomiciled or unhoused or undomiciled. Yeah. Really? I mean, how is that different than homeless? It's semantics,
yeah.
but that's, you know, where people are now. And so and that's just one example. There's so many other examples of how we've changed things. And I used to come out and say, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now you can't do that because you're assuming someone's gender.
Yes.
So, yeah, you know, now you have to, good evening, ladies and gentlemen who identify as ladies and ladies who identify as gentlemen and everybody. And it's like, come on, enough. Just, yeah. you know, now I have to, and Disney even did that. Disney used to say, good evening, boys and girls and children of all ages. Now they've changed that because everyone's so triggered. And wow. I used to worry about born again Christians, but now I worry about young people who wake up in the morning waiting to be triggered by something. And that's their first mission is to be triggered so they can go on social media and eviscerate somebody. And well, it's like, come on. And then now they're finding Seinfeld offensive. Seinfeld is squeaky clean.
Yeah.
If Seinfeld's offending you, holy God, the rest of us are doomed.
I tell my students, and this, I know the world doesn't agree with this, but you know, the only obligation you have is to entertain those people who are in front of you right now. And don't worry about how this is going to be viewed later or what people are going to think about it. That's the audience. And so when Seinfeld is made, it's made for the audience of people watching television in the 90s. And they were okay with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I tell people, they come up to me after the show and, you know, most people are very nice and everything, but occasionally someone will say, hey, I have a relative who is a little person and you did a joke about dwarfs or something. And I'll be like, yep, I did. I'm sorry if you were offended, but I'm not going to take the joke out. I'm going to do it again because, you know, 99.9% of the other people in the room laughed at it and you might have not laughed at it. But I appreciate that you didn't have a hissy fit in the middle of the joke and came up to me afterwards and said something. But that's just kind of, it's a weird place that we are now, Joel. I'm preaching to the choir. I know this as well, especially since you're teaching it.
I'm teaching it and working at the club. I see it every week. And so just real quick, we'll get back to the interview, but do we have to put some sort of notification about dwarfs as they enter the building? Should there be something on the doors that, you know, if you're a dwarf, you may want to turn back now because
I'm short. I am vertically challenged. You know, I'm 5'7" on a good day. That's what it says on my license, and it's a lie. Yeah. So I, you know, when I play mini golf, I call it golf. So I think I'm allowed to make fun of things. You know, I do these corporate gigs now, and I used to just show up and do the corporate gig. Now I have to have 6 phone calls before the corporate gig because someone from every department wants to make sure you're not going to say something. And so by the end, there's no meat on the bone. All they want me to do is make fun of myself.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to listen to self-deprecating humor for an entire hour.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to be, comedy is mocking and lampooning, and we should be able to do that.
Yeah, it is.
But We live in a weird time where people don't accept that.
All right. So the list right now, I'm going to it's another piece of paper. Don't worry about it. But anyway, let's move on. corporate shows. You mentioned those. I always tell my comedy students, one of the most lucrative things in all of stand-up comedy is a corporate gig. And not everybody can do the corporate gig for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned. But that's the thing that you found success doing, it sounds like.
Yeah. I tell people it's all C's. It's colleges, corporations, cruise ships, casinos, and comedy clubs. And during the summer, country clubs. And the two at the top of that list, colleges and corporations, have the deepest pockets. They have the biggest budgets. So obviously you want to be able to work at those two. I'm a little older now, so I'm doing less colleges and more corporate. Those are great. Those are my people. They're people I can relate to, and people who are maybe married, have kids, like sports and stuff that I can relate to. So I love doing corporate gigs now. Not only do they pay better, but they usually treat you pretty well, and you get to go to some pretty cool places when you do them.
But do you feel that the audience for those is sometimes like they're not really there for comedy? They're there because it's a sales meeting or something like that, and that you're sort of having to, that it's comedy out of context a little bit? Or do you feel like they're completely into it? Are you bring there's a amount of time that you need to bring them into it?
Yeah, I think the way it's set up when I do it is I say, don't, you know, I'll go before dinner or after dinner, but just not during dinner, because nobody laughs with a mouthful of lobster tail and prime rib. And I've experienced that many times. But generally, I think they're pretty appreciative because they've listened to sales meetings all day. And I know I'm funnier than a sales guy. So you generally, we're a little respite at the end. We're a little little reward to them sitting through these horribly boring and mundane sales meetings with charts and everything else. So, I think they're appreciative and they enjoy it. It's funny to see whoever the big swinging, I don't have to finish that sentence, but the big guy in charge or girl in charge is, if they sit up front and they have a good sense of humor, I watch the audience from the stage. So I watch all their heads turn to see if that person's laughing. Mm-hmm. And if that person's laughing, then they feel like they can laugh. Yeah. And if that person's a stick in the mud and has no sense of humor, I'm screwed. Because if that person's not laughing, they're going to hold in their laughter. So I always say before the show, if the CEO or a whoever the big president is kind of introverted or quiet, let's not set them up front.
Yeah.
And if they're gregarious and outgoing and fun and like a good laugh, sit them right up front so everyone can see them, and then they know that it's okay to laugh. That's just an inside baseball dynamic that I've encountered over 30 years of doing this. Yeah.
And do you find out what that guy's into? Is that part of the prep for this thing? Are you trying to figure out, well, this guy's a big golfer, this guy's a big, he likes to fish, or you find out about the company and work that in some way?
Those phone calls that I have before the thing, that's where I'm doing. I'm creating a dossier on this person. I'm doing some reconnaissance. And then when I get there and I do the sound check, I double check everything and I say, who can I make fun of? Who can't I make fun of? Who's going to be able to take a joke on the sales team and who's not? And, you know, they kind of set it all up for me. And they tell me the CEO has four kids, loves to golf, went to this college, has been married this many years. And that's all information that may or may not make it into my act, because they like inside material. They like personal jokes. So I try to tailor it a little bit to the company and the people in charge.
Right. And then locally, do you do that too? Will you have Detroit jokes as you come into town?
Well, I may mention the Lions, who are on fire right now. Yeah. And I may mention Michigan versus the Spartans. You know, there's all kinds of stuff I can segue into and out of. And, the clock goes so quickly that I can't get it all in an hour. But over the course of the weekend, we'll get to all of it, I'm sure.
Detroit Tigers are in the playoffs. Did you know that?
That's big, because my Boston Red Sox suck right now. And they did not make the playoffs.
Well,
so
we haven't been in the playoffs in 10 years in this town. So it's a big deal. But
well, you deserve it.
I guess. I had nothing to do with it.
It's a good sports town.
It is.
You guys live in a great time right now.
I think so. Detroit's all right. Yeah. And Royal Oak, not exactly Detroit. I think you're aware of that.
I am aware of that. I like Royal Oak. I you know, I've been there a few times and I like going there. I like all of Michigan. I work at Dr. Grin's on occasion.
Yeah, I've done that.
I used to do a club called Chaplains years and years ago.
Oh, my God. I played there a million times.
Yeah, I think that went the way of the dinosaurs. Yeah. So, yeah, I've been there a million times. And I went to school in Ohio. So I went to Michigan for weekends all the time. So, yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, Chaplains Comedy Club. We got stories about that place on this show over the years. The Hargis brothers. Those guys were just the worst. Just the worst.
It was all right.
I mean, it was a nice, the audience came out, had a great time. They set up, you know, nice setup and stuff, but my goodness.
It was no Comedy Castle, though, if we're being honest. Well, you know what I mean?
Look, part of what makes a comedy club great is the owner and the person that's running the thing. And, you know, when our owner, Mark Ridley, is a guy who loves comedy, you know, that helps.
Ridley is one of the... like the great ambassadors. Mm-hmm. I put him up there with Bud Friedman and a few other people because he's been around forever and he just knows everything about the business and knows how to run a comedy club effectively and efficiently. And so that the audience is happy, the comedians are happy, the servers are happy, and everybody wins.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, that's a rare trait. So I commend him on that.
He does a real good job that way. But some of these places, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh God. Again, you're preaching to the choir now. I worked at these places. I'm like, are you in business? How do you have a liquor license?
What's the worst place you've played?
Oh God, I've done so. I worked in Pakistan.
Oh geez.
I'm going to Israel in October.
Well, you timed that well. So,
yeah. I'm not saying they're bad places. I'm just saying they're, you know, I may not make it back. That's all. Right, but
okay.
God, I've done everything, dude. I've done I've done jokes in a factory. I've done a laundromat back in the day. I've told jokes everywhere.
Yeah.
So I've had great shows in horrible places and I've had horrible shows in great places.
That's true too.
You really can't figure it out.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, you have those where you go, oh, this, what a beautiful place, and then it's like the show is a complete afterthought.
I hate being background music, and they do that to you all the time at corporate gigs and fundraisers and stuff. And
bring the food out right as you step on stage.
Yeah, or they have the auction, in the background, or the open bar is in the back, and everyone's going there. And so, music can be background music.
Yeah,
poetry, comedians, ministers. We can't be, we're speaking, and you have to listen to us. That's kind of how it works.
We had a fundraiser at the club recently, and it was two comics and two real good comics. But they, as the second guy, the headliner, was going up, they said, "Hey, we're about to bring up our headliner, and we're going to bring him out here right now. But remember, it's the last call for the silent auction." Half the crowd got up and walked to the silent auction, and here's your headliner for the.
I did a gig at a racetrack on Long Island, and. It was under a tent next to the track. And so they're not going to stop the races.
Yeah.
So you have to get up there and you're going, in the middle of a race. And so the audience is all these people who are betting on the race.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of your set, someone wins, but 90% of them lose. So the two people who win get up to go cash in their tickets. And I'm stuck with everybody else who just lost, who's all pissed off. That's my audience. So, I've had some horrible, horrible experiences over the year, but I still get back in the saddle and ride again because I love what I do.
Yeah, you got to love what you do. And you're one of the best guys to do it. I don't think that's I'm speaking out of school here.
Well, you got to get out more, but I appreciate that thought. That's nice. I'm
with the comedy cat. I see everybody coming through those doors.
You do.
I do. And you're great. I'm so excited to have you back this weekend.
I'm thrilled to be back.
It's
It'll be fun.
Be good. Yeah, it should be fun, man. Well, thanks for talking, Tom. I mean, come on. This is a real thrill for me and getting great advice that I will pass along to my comedy students here.
You're going to be around the whole weekend?
Yeah, I should be.
Are you going to do a guestie?
No, I don't do those. They don't let me do those.
No. They have no
taste. I'd love to. Well, the thing is you don't want to be the guy that's like, dragging the show down, and just in terms of length, and if I do time, it's less time for you, or it's less time for the feature, and then that guy's gonna hate me. I get my shots to go up with my students and stuff like that, but I used to tour,
and you, I everybody say, everybody should come out and see me this weekend. I'm there Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, but they should also come out and see you on another night.
Well, so, they see me on another night. They'll see me. They will see me taking them to their seat, and then you will entertain them. That's how it's going to go. And that's great.
I like that.
I do a good job taking them to their seat, Tom.
I know you do. Nobody seats better than you.
But I also, you know, I tell them to shut up when that is necessary. I tell them they have to leave at times.
That's very important.
Yeah, helps you guys.
It does. Yeah,
it's important. Good door staff.
Go so fast that people can't heckle, so I don't think you'll be throwing people out during my show.
I don't think we will either. Tom, thanks so much for talking to me today. It was great. Looking forward to the weekend, and we'll see you then, man.
I look forward to it, Joel. Thank you for chatting with me, and go pet your dog on the head and say that I'm not bitter, that I still like dogs.
He's a good boy. He does no tricks, and I'm okay with that.
That's all right.
I love it.
All right, buddy. Thank you. I'll see you this weekend.
Sounds good, Tom. Thank you.
See you.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, on the other end of my line, it is a real honor to have Brad Upton on the show. Brad, how are you?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Sunday.
Yeah, I am too.
Yeah, it's been a minute since you've been back. I met you the last time you were there.
Yeah, so that's been, I don't know, a couple of years. Maybe I did a corporate event in there.
Oh, it's possible.
Or a fundraiser. Yeah. I don't remember.
Couldn't tell you, but I remember seeing you live for the first time at the club, and I complimented you after that show. And because as a guy, like, I'm a comic myself, I teach comedy classes at the club, and I said, you're just setups and punchlines. It's the leanest show you'll ever see. It's setups and punchline. Those jokes come as fast as anyone. It's amazing. You are real talented.
Yeah, there's not a lot of fluff. I don't waste a lot of words.
It's tremendous. I mean, you just talk about killing it. I mean, people don't even catch their breath. They're laughing.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, at this point in my career, because, you know, I do about 75 minutes. And, you know, when you start, you're doing 45 and you think, man, you're doing 45 headlining sets. Yeah. That's a big, long, killer set. And now I'm like, God, 45 is quick. It's weird.
Yeah, the goalposts move a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's you got to get the jokes in, and there's a demand, you know.
I got enough stuff to fill it up. And I feel like now that people know who I am and I'm selling tickets and they're buying tickets to see me, I should give them a longer show.
Absolutely. You've earned it.
Yep.
Earned it. When did you start comedy officially? What was the first year?
It was 40 years ago this month.
Was it really? Wow. Okay.
September 4th of 84 when I did my first open mic. Yeah. I just passed my 40th anniversary.
That's tremendous. Congratulations.
Before you were born.
No, not at all, dude. I'm 52.
Oh, okay.
I'm 52.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right.
It is my 25th anniversary of comedy in November.
Oh, great. So, congrats.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. But I'd say
rookie.
Exactly. I will always be. And I know the guys I started with that had been doing it for 20, 30 years when I started. I'm always the new guy to them.
Yeah, exactly.
you never get past that. But so you were really part of what you call the boom, the 80s boom.
Absolutely. I mean, I started in September of 84, and by June of 86, which was about 20 months, I quit my day job and went full time. Yeah. And you can't imagine somebody doing it in 20 months now. There's no way.
Yeah.
But there was enough work and gigs, and you're like, I'm quitting. I'm doing this full time.
So let me ask you about the 80s then, because I hear stories from, you know, the old timers in Michigan that I would open for starting out. And it was, you know, 8 shows a week and, you know, $1,500 to middle for a week and all that stuff. Is that all true? Did you experience that? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I never got $1,500 to middle, but there was enough, you know, there was all kinds of, feature weeks that paid $700. Yeah. You know what I mean? All kinds of them. And then all kinds of one nighters that paid bar gigs that paid $200 for the headliner and $100 for the feature. And you could fill up your calendar and make nice money.
Well, some of those bar gigs are back, but they're still $200 and $100.
Well, they're not even that around Seattle. The money's gone. I'm like, this is unbelievable. 40 years later and the money's left. Yeah. That's just terrible.
Too many people want to do it now. It's easier to start now, I think, for most people.
Oh, it's easier to get on stage. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, and there's, you know, in Seattle, there's probably 1,000 open micers. I don't know what the number is.
Yeah, but, no, you're not wrong.
You know, when I started, there was a dozen. Yeah, you know exactly. what I mean?
Yeah,
you
when just I, knew in the 90s, who was around. Yeah, in the 90s, yeah. there was like 20 open mic guys.
Yeah, and you know it. Who they yeah. all were, and they were all friends of yours, and now there's hundreds.
Yeah. Well, you're
but they're all doing 3 minutes.
I talked to a guy recently, and he's doing a lot of the one-nighters, and I really just work at the Comedy Cast for the most part, so I'm not really on the road much. And I go, why are these one-nighters having 5 and 6 comics on the bill? Like,
exactly.
Are you splitting that money 5-6 ways instead of 2 ways? Or what's
no, nobody can get up. You know, when I started, you wanted to get to where you could do 15 so you could MC, and then you wanted to get 30 and then you wanted to get 45. Well, these guys can never do that because they're only ever doing 8 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's hard to build an act. That's why there's guys that are doing it for years and they don't even have 30 minutes yet. And it's not that there aren't very good. They just don't get chances to stretch their legs.
Yeah. I do that. But you're out there doing everything. I'm looking at what you're up to. I mean, come on. You got this. You're in Ohio before you're in Michigan. This week?
I'm doing Kilbuck and Minerva, doing some little theaters on Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday morning I drive to Royal Oak, check into the hotel, sleep like a brown bear, and then head for the club.
Yeah. And then I see you're still out with Johnny Mathis. That's amazing.
I am out with Johnny. He can still sing, man. It's unbelievable. Yeah. I got 3 shows with him. I got 3 shows with him in December. They're all Christmas concerts.
Yeah, that's terrific, man. Johnny's still out there. Because then Johnny can sing. You're telling me that. You're not just saying
that. I'm telling
you,
man.
You're telling
me
here. You're not lying to me.
That man's voice is still powerful. He still hits the high notes. You're like, yeah, look at that.
Yeah. I saw pictures of you two. He looks great.
Yeah, he looks great.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he's like any, I mean, he's 89. So he's, but on stage when he's out there performing, you don't see it. And then when he walks off stage at the end of the show, you're like, oh, yeah, he's 89. But while he's out there on stage, he's Johnny Mathis, you know. It's amazing.
Good for him. I watched some I think he came to town and I almost went, but I watched some clips of, you know, Frankie Valli's touring. He's 93. I love Frankie Valli. I think it's great music, but
I think Johnny and I did the Fox Theater one time years ago, and then we did the I want to say it's Caesar's Palace, is that across?
Well, the palace, yeah, Windsor? Caesar's Windsor, yes. Big show
there. We did it. Yeah, we did it there one time, too. Yeah,
that's tremendous, man. That's a good, and that's sort of, you know, old school comedy. The comic opening for the singer, that's old Vegas right there.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know what's cool about the gig is I go up in the middle of the show.
Oh, okay, really?
Johnny comes out, Johnny opens, he comes out, he sings about 40 minutes, and then he introduces me.
Yeah.
And I do 25.
Oh, wow.
And then we go to the intermission, and then he comes out and he sings the second half, about 45 minutes. So with my 25 and the intermission, he's got 45 minutes off in the middle.
Wow. So you open and follow Johnny Mathis in the same night, sort of.
I don't open at all.
You follow.
I follow and then open.
And then you open. Exactly. Sort of, that's so crazy. Well, now look, I think for anyone else, that seems like a real hard gig.
Oh, it's a sweet gig.
Yeah,
because I tell you, because I told when I first did it, I go, how's this going to work going out there with John, you know, follow Johnny Mathis. But when Johnny Mathis tells the audience, here's my friend that you're going to like.
Yeah,
they already like me. I don't have to prove myself. They already like me. I'm Johnny's friend. And I'm like, oh, this must be what it's like to be famous.
And it's not like a bathroom break for the audience or anything.
Oh,
nice.
No, it's great. It works out great.
But even if you were heading to the bathroom, I think 2 jokes in, they'd be like, I'm going to watch this guy. I think they didn't know you. They'd be like, oh, this guy's.
Yeah. That audience is old, so they're ready to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, I'm old. Please, come on. But yeah, that's a tremendous gig. And I think doing those, you know, and I know I've opened for, you know, bigger acts and stuff. You have to be good. You know,
right.
If people aren't there to see you and you're not good, they don't care at all.
No, that's right. That's how I, you know, I've been doing it with him for almost 17 years. Wow. So, and they tried me out the first time. It was like a one-time show, right? So, had a great show, and I've been with him ever since.
Oh, that's a testament right there. You get anybody to open for him, I would think. or perform with him, even more intimate of, you know.
It's a good gig. It really is a good gig. Yeah. And I, you know, since I've blown up on the internet and I'm selling tickets and making more money myself, and I told my manager, I said, look, I'm going to keep opening for Johnny till the end. I don't care. Yeah. I'm not going to turn that down.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, that's great. I remember I heard a story involved about some Vegas comic and they were opening. I think they opened for a singer. I don't, maybe you know this story better than I do. And the headliner would never watch them. You know, they would go out and they did this for years and years, but the headliner, you know, they showed up late and whatever. And then they did their thing and they were like, please, could you, you know, I've been with you for 10 years. I go back to the headliner. Could you please watch me tonight? You know, it just would mean a lot. I know you don't watch me. So the headliner watched this guy after one show. He told his manager, you got to fire that opener.
That's great.
Yeah,
I believe it.
Be careful what you wish for.
No, that's exactly right.
Biting the hand that feeds you there. But and I saw recently too, you're performing at the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, I've done that. Like I just did my 19th. Yeah. I think it was my 19th appearance. And that is surreal too. Yeah, and I mean, what an honor, because they don't use a lot of comics.
Right.
And to walk out and stand in that circle is a big deal.
Yeah, and that's like the actual Grand Ole Opry show, not just Ryman Auditorium, right? That's the
it's at the Grand Ole Opry. And there's always been a history that the Opry's always used a comedy or comedians. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of times they were, you know, hokum country acts, kind of hee-haw,
kind of
hee-haw acts. But there's always been a history of comedy with the Grand Ole Opry, so they've always used a comedian or two, not on the same night, not two comedians. But they there's a handful of comedians that they use, and man, it's an honor to walk out there.
Yeah, that'd be amazing. I mean, not for me, I couldn't do that.
I just did yesterday was my 5th anniversary since I first appeared there, and I got that from the lady had seen my video that went viral about millennials.
Yeah,
that's how that worked out.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Because I contacted her and I said, I got this video. It's got like 65 million views. And, you know, and she said, well, I happen to be one of the 65 million that saw it. So I'd love to have you. And she put me on. And again, you go up there and they're going to see how you do. And if you do great, then you get to come back. So, I've done like 19 of them. It's great. It's fun. It's like real show business.
Yeah,
oh, crap. This is an all-star lineup of people going up here tonight. I'm in the middle of it.
All right. This is not the comedy club. This is not the...
No, it's exactly... No, you're going... Yeah. You're the comedy of all the music. Yeah. Right. So it's pretty cool.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk about going viral. I mean, you had been in comedy for how long before the Dry Bar thing took off?
Like 34 years.
Then
that video blew up, the first one about the millennials. Nobody more surprised than me because, you know, all that stuff about the millennials, I'd been doing it for 10 years. So it's like all of a sudden this thing blew up. I'm like, whoa, I've been this isn't new material. This is just something I've been doing in my act all these years. But, you know, that's how viral stuff, all of a sudden a much bigger audience sees it. And it was pretty weird in year 34. Very odd.
Yeah. And it's technology that didn't even exist when you started.
No, not at all. Yeah. Cell phones didn't exist. The internet didn't exist. No, none of it.
That's amazing. Because we just had a comic, young comic, Cam Bertrand, who did a great job this past weekend. Same deal. He went viral on the Dry Bar thing at the age of like 24.
Wow.
And you go, well, you expect that, you know, you expect the young guy. And then when you did it, it was really amazing. That's how I heard about you originally.
Well, I know a lot of, you know, I've known a lot of comics in my peer group, and they were all reaching out to me so happy that somebody our age had popped, you know what I mean, after all these years. So everybody was kind of just thrilled for me, too. Yeah. So that was very humbling.
Yeah, because you put in your bio about, you know, I never moved to the coast, and you always stayed with your family and all that stuff. Now, did you see guys? Did you ever feel a little ping of jealousy when people were getting big opportunities, guys that maybe you started out with?
I never got really. You know, I just never, I was like, something will happen. My turn will happen. And then, you know, I had literally made peace with the fact that nothing was ever going to happen. And that was the key, to give up.
Yeah.
Give up. And then you'll hit. So I was like, well, I'm 34 years into this. Nothing's going to happen. And that's okay. I've checked all the boxes off anyway with my comedy. You're just not very well known to the public, and that's okay. And you know, you've been in this 25 years. You know a bunch of good guys that have been doing it forever.
Absolutely.
And they're great.
Yeah.
They're great comics. And they're fantastic comics. They're just not big names.
Yeah. I mean, all the guys I would tour with back in the day, just guys like Norm Stultz. I don't know if you know all these names, but Midwestern guys, Norm Stultz and Billy Ray Bauer. Bill Hildebrand was a guy that took me on the road. And it was just these guys could kill anywhere. And I would, I would go up, and sometimes I did great. Sometimes I just did okay. The occasional bomb that I, always blamed on the audience or the venue.
Right.
But doesn't matter what happened to me. Whenever they went up, it was always great. They always did well.
And those guys are all over, and you're just like, the public doesn't realize it, that there's some really good guys that are out there slugging it away, and they still write and they still perform, and they're great. Yeah. So it was a big deal. It was very odd. And then, I had that blew up in 2018. And so I was getting some momentum off of that, and then COVID hit and then, people found me during COVID.
Nice.
A lot of them found me during COVID, just sitting at home with nothing to do. And a lot of people found me. And then just coming out of COVID in 2022, I released another special, and that went great.
Yeah. Oh, that's terrific to find that audience and there'd be loyal to you like that. Stick around. Yeah. Well, I'm really looking forward to the weekend. We have a great weekend, and that's not just you. We have Tom Cotter's doing the Thursday to Saturday.
I love Tom. And I've known Tom for years.
I just got off the phone with Tom before we spoke. So,
yeah, he's a great guy.
I said, what do you, I'm going to talk to Brad. Anything you want me to say? And he said, Brad can go fuck himself. So I don't know.
Yeah, that sounds exactly like you said it. You said it with his cadence, too. You said it with his perfect cadence.
Well, any shit you want to talk about, Tom?
Tom can go fuck himself.
Exactly. There is this is it.
We are the only two in the Las Vegas Comedy Festival occurred in like 2003 and 2004, and he and I are the only two winners of it.
Yeah,
the Las Vegas Comedy Festival. Yeah.
That's great. Well, I'm trying to start a feud here, but I don't know if that's gonna happen.
Yeah, nah.
No, you're not interested.
Nah.
You know, we don't want to fight over the turf or something.
No. Tom's a great guy. I wish I could see him. I wish I could come into town and see him.
He's great. No, I love Tom and I love you. It's a great weekend. This is the 200th podcast that we've ever done on the Comedy Cast. And I've got two of the best guys in the world talking to me.
I feel you honored. So much.
Seriously, I feel completely honored by this whole thing.
I appreciate it.
All right, before we get out of here, I got to tell me about Joan Rivers, working with her. I need to know.
She was wonderful too. I did about 20 shows with her. I went on a couple of different tours with her. She was sweet as can be and just a powerhouse on stage.
I was a big fan as a kid. Yeah.
I mean, just watching her work on stage, she'd come out, she'd do 70 minutes every night. And I mean, her foot was on the floor when she walked out.
Wow.
And, she was joke, just pop, bam, 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 punchline, just kill for 70 minutes.
Yeah.
And, she'd do a shot of vodka right before she walked out. It was in her rider to have a pint of vodka, and she'd take one shot, and then right before she'd walk out, she'd hit that, and out she'd go. And just a sweet lady, sweet lady. And she liked me because I was clean.
Right.
She wanted her opener to be clean
because
she said, "You know me, I'm filthy, so I'm going to drop the C word about 90 seconds into this."
Yeah.
So, I don't want my opener to take the shock out of the audience. Shock the audience, I want to do it.
Right.
So she liked me, and she gave me, after the first time I worked with her, she gave me a phone number, and she said, "Here, this is the agent in Hollywood, and you call them and you tell them you've been Joan approved." And so that's how I got in with her. I'd start calling them and, look at her schedule and see, boy, could I do that one? Could I do that one? Yes, yes, yes. And then I just started putting together these dates.
Nice. Yeah, she was a piece of work. Now, when you talk about writing, because Joan really did that. I saw the documentary where she, her joke files and that. And I feel like you're a guy that must spend a certain amount of time writing. What's your process for that? Do you sit down and write? Do you say, I'm going to write right now? Do things just come to you throughout the day or, before you go to bed?
Well, I can tell you, I'll be honest with you, too. I got lazy for a long time until I blew up on the internet. I got lazy. I had this hour that worked every night and you didn't. I still wrote stuff, but for 34 years, I walked on stage pretty anonymously every night, and people didn't know who I was. And I would come out and kill and hopefully exceed their expectations. And then after everybody saw me, I was like, oh, crap, I got to start writing again. I got to start creating. So get off my ass and do it. But a lot of it is just observation and daily. And I have a lot of stuff I write down, and then I just keep looking at it and going, when, how am I going to get this funny? Where's the funny part?
Yeah.
And then the hard part now, though, is, you know, trying to work it into your act, because you got to try some new stuff. Mm-hmm. And you're like, well, I'm going to put this new chunk here in the middle and see if I can stumble over it a few nights and see if I can make that work. So that's kind of what I do now.
OK. Cause yeah. You have that thing about when you have an act that works, that the new stuff has to be as good as the old stuff.
Absolutely. If you're really going to drop 5 minutes. No, that's right, because these 75 minutes really work. So if I'm putting in 5 new minutes, then 5 good minutes is leaving. Yeah. So then I got a bunch of callbacks. I got a ton of callbacks. Okay. So you're like, well, I don't want to drop that piece because it goes with this second piece. So
right, yeah. Well, I've seen that so many times working at the Comedy Castle where, you know, you're doing 5 shows a week and some of these headliners will call back the joke they didn't do. That is one of the most awkward things you can ever see. Oh,
or they set it up in the first show and then call it back in the second. Yeah. The look on their face is like, whoa, what happened?
And the audience is just kind of like, oh, what the hell?
Yeah, that didn't make sense. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I'll be laughing. That's usually
the funny part.
You see me laughing in the corner, like, what, why is that guy laughing? No,
watch the comic squirm. That's always funny.
You used to say it was in vaudeville, like, if you're making the band laugh, you're bombing, you know?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's exactly right. I have that feeling with Mathis Group sometimes when the band is laughing behind me.
Yeah, they know it all. They know all the jokes, so they're only laughing when you're fucking them up. Right. I swore. I hope that's okay with you. It's my
problem. Oh, yeah, that's fine.
That's okay. Let me tell you, so you had a health scare not that long ago. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I was having trouble for several months. I was having trouble with my lungs and my esophagus and my sinuses, and I couldn't figure, you know, I was sick and I wasn't missing any gigs, but I was treating all the symptoms with over-the-counter medicine, and I was getting to the gigs, and then I actually got misdiagnosed with esophageal cancer.
Oh, geez.
So, that's a bad one.
Yeah.
And so I went, in fact, when I got diagnosed, I called Keith Stubbs at Dry Bar and I go, look, I just got diagnosed with esophageal cancer. I want to put this, I want to do another special ASAP because I may be getting chemo and radiation and dying. I don't know what's going on. So anyway, he gave me a slot about 3 weeks out and I went, some of this material is new, but I put it together and I did the second special. And in the meantime, they stuffed a tube down my nose and into my esophagus and did a biopsy and went, it's not cancerous. We don't know what's going on. We don't know what this is. And, cause I was coughing and coughing and coughing and having trouble breathing. And, anyway, and as we were waiting for new tests, I had a heart attack and my right coronary artery was 100% blocked and they put 3 stents in there and sent me home. And, about 4 days later, well, when you have a heart attack, they put you on blood thinners, right? Yeah. So they sent me home. And then about 4 days later, I thought I had another heart attack. So I went back to the hospital and they do chest x-rays. And the guy goes, you're having a vasospasm, which is similar to a heart attack, but not a heart attack. And then he takes a picture of my chest and he goes, it's a physician, right? Mm. He goes, God, your lungs are full of blood clots. And he goes, how the fuck are you making those blood clots on the amount of blood thinners you're on? And he goes, we're admitting you to the hospital. And I was in the hospital for 8 days. Ugh. And then it took them 4 days and they diagnosed me with a very rare form of vasculitis called EGPA. There's only about 5,000 cases of it in the United States. And I'm literally 2 in a million. So anyway, I'm on these drugs that suppress that disease now, and I'm okay. I'm doing okay. But that disease is what caused the heart attack, because it causes your arteries to inflame to the point that they close up. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. That's, yeah. Wow.
So that's why I was having trouble with the lungs and the esophagus and all these problems is my, these veins, and then the heart attack, which I did not see coming.
Yeah.
But wow. Anyway, yeah, it scared the shit out of me because I was laying there on the table with all these people running around trying to make sure I didn't die. So It was very sobering, very humbling, but I'm doing fine now.
Good to know. Yeah, that's great. I think they just looked at me at the doctor and looked at my age and went like, yeah, we're going to do the CT scan, you know, of the arteries. And then
right.
They kind of looked at me and said, looked at my, you know, cholesterol score. And I was zero across the board. I was very lucky. So I'm not going to.
Oh, good.
But
good.
I'm 52, so you know.
Yeah, well, if you ever have chest pains, don't ignore it.
Yes, exactly. That's great advice. Thank you for that. What else can I tell you? I mean, well, I guess after saying that, that's just really just another. This is where we tell people to come get their tickets.
Exactly.
this could be the last one.
No, that's right. And I'm cutting way back in 2025. Way back in the future. I'm going to cut way back on the amount of dates. So if you think, oh, I'll see him next time he's in town, that may not happen. Exactly. So
like I said,
come out now. Yeah.
Come Sunday night. And again, Brad, and you know, I say this about not a lot of comics. Bring grandma, bring the kids. If they're grown, if they're over 18, everyone will love Brad.
Yep. I'm very humbled that a wide range of people enjoy me. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Well, even though I make fun of the Gen Z, they still like me.
They'll laugh at that stuff too, though.
Yeah, and I make fun of boomers too. So,
well, Brad,
like
I said, man, it's a real honor to talk to you. I'm really looking forward to Sunday night, and thanks for talking.
I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man, 200th show. Right. What a great guest to have, man.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. We'll see you this weekend, Brad.
All right, Joel. All right, take care, man.
Take care, buddy.
Bye, bye.
Well, there you go, guys. Two of the best in the business. Brad Upton, thank you. Tom Cotter, thank you. Great interviews. Thanks for talking to me, guys. So fun, the 200th episode. Two of the best in the business. But I really did want that feud. I really did want those guys to trash each other. But they like each other. Respect, man. They respect each other. You know, I'm like, well, these two veteran comics should have a turf war. Royal Caribbean is my turf. You go work Norwegian Cruise Lines. IBM is my client. I do the corporate show. No, anyway, but they're really great guys. You know, Tom even offered me a guest set. What a mensch. What a dude. Love Tom Cotter. Love Brad Upton. Glad he's doing well after his health scares. And really, again, like I said, with Brad, bring your mom, bring your dad, bring your kids if they're over 18. For really either of these guys, they're going to have a great time. It doesn't matter which show you come to this weekend, you're going to see something great. Of course, we're raising money for the homeless on Thursday with Tom Cotter, so that might be a great option for you, too. You want to do some good and see a great comedy show and have a great meal. Thursday night might be your night. It's just great things happening at the Comedy Castle every week. Cam Bertrand last week. Tremendous. Love that guy. So great to have Cam on the show and see him do a killer weekend. And thanks to all of you guys. You know, we've done 200 shows here. Tom McCarthy, you know, had the idea for this show. He brought me in to produce it. And, you know, me and him made, I don't know, 100 and some shows. And then he turned it over to me. And I've been doing a one-man show here for the last few years. And I appreciate you guys listening, paying attention, and enjoying this show. I love hearing feedback from you guys. And let's just do 200 more, right? Or 300 more, 400 more. Can I do 400 more shows, or will I drop dead before then? I'll be alive for 400 more shows. Will Mark Ridley's Comedy Castle be in existence for 400 more weeks? I believe that's possible. I believe that's likely. Comedy Castle's not going anywhere. Since 1979, the best in comedy. So thanks to you guys for listening. And of course, thanks to Mark Ridley for making all of this happen for us. Giving me a chance to talk to two of the guys that I admire so much with Tom and Brad here this week. And again, thanks for listening. Let's get out of here. We'll catch you next time. But come out this week. You got no excuse not to come out this week. You got to come out this week. Unbelievable talents. Go see a show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.